Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast on day two of the US Open, where you find us once again for part one of the show in the media garden. We've had around about two-thirds of the day's play. It's not hot, but it is unbelievably humid today. The air feels like soup. It feels like you're breathing in Boston clam chowder, sort of bits and all. It's such a bizarre day of weather, and it is not the sort of weather it's not the sort of weather that I want to do anything in, but it's definitely not the sort of weather that you want to play a tennis match in. And we have seen a lot of players to varying degrees have not a lot of fun out there today, David.
Yeah, I mean, probably some of them would say, well, this isn't unpleasant compared to what we've had in the past, but you're right. I mean, just breathing in, you feel as though there isn't enough air for it to go around. And I don't know how they do it. They're marvels to me, the way they run about and do properly cardiovascular exercise over 4+ hours. But, you know, they are super fit and I am not.
Yeah, there was a period in the afternoon where I kept looking up at the screen and was like, oh, he looks a bit of a state. And then he looks a bit of a state. And then another screen, oh gosh, everyone just looks a bit of a state. It was a sweaty, sweaty day.
Yeah, and a day that really exposes for me how not fit for purpose the rules about cramping are in the sport, because it is quite simply, it's just not as simple as it being a loss of condition. I know, yes, we aren't, David, as fit as professional athletes. Bombshell, I know. But some people are just more prone to cramping or struggling in these kind of conditions than others. And I know it's difficult because they introduced that rule in order to clamp down on tactical timeouts, but this situation doesn't feel quite right for me either. We had Corentin Moutet earlier call the trainer during his 3-set defeat to Andy Murray and asked for pickle juice, which he was denied. But not denied because that would be treatment for cramp. Denied because the trainer simply did not carry pickle juice about his person.
That's not ideal, is it?
Anyway, we'll come on to that match in due course. We've all just been in Andy Murray's press conference after his 200th career Grand Slam win. But let's start with Ons Jabeur, who kicked off action on the Louis Armstrong Stadium today, because nobody struggled in the conditions more, I don't think, than Ons Jabeur today. Not just because it was unpleasant out there and she played in the peak heat of the day, but because she is suffering. She's suffering from what she said after the match is flu. She's got the flu. She was sniffly in her pre-tournament press conference. She was asked about that and she dismissed it and said, oh, it's just American AC. I think she made a joke, you know, she said, American AC just kills me, it's nothing. Well, it's clearly not nothing. She still won. 7-5, 7-6 versus Camila Osorio. Lucky, I think, not to get dragged into a third. And had she got into a third set, I would have really worried about her. This was an ordeal to watch, and I'm starting to realise that I go into Ons Jabeur matches with deep trepidation at the moment. And I know there's special circumstances happening here. She's got flu, dreadful. The air is like soup, dreadful. But we had ordeal matches in Cincinnati as well, didn't we? And we had the ultimate ordeal Ons Jabeur match at Wimbledon. Watching Ons Jabeur at the moment, Matt, is a bit of an ordeal, and I imagine being Ons Jabeur at the moment also might be a little bit of an ordeal.
Yeah, the vibes are just off, aren't they? I always think of Ons Jabeur in her press conferences saying what she wants to do on a tennis court is have fun, and she is so far from that at the moment, as you said, in all sorts of different ways, whether it be, you know, playing that Wimbledon final, that was not fun, whether it be the baggage that's accumulated because of that, or whether it be today when she's feeling so unwell. And it was a real ordeal. I think that's the perfect word. She had respiratory problems, coughing, spluttering. Trainer came on court. Her vitals were checked. I was really struggling to see how she would continue the match, to be quite honest. She did. And then she got into a position where it seemed like she was actually going to win it reasonably straightforwardly in that second set, but served for it twice and couldn't close it out. And that was a familiar sight based on what I watched of her match the other week against Kalinina, where when she was in the lead, when she was a front runner, suddenly she got really tight. She seems to be having a bit of a closing problem at the moment. Ended up winning it in that tiebreak. I think there was part of me that thought Osorio was going to be an absolute nightmare opponent for Ons Jabeur playing like this, because she's plucky and she, you know, latches on to little bits of momentum and makes big deals out of them, and she's a great fighter. But actually, I didn't think she played a great match, Osorio, and maybe slightly let Jabeur off the hook. But yeah, one of those matches where you think amazing that she's got through it, and obviously hopefully she'll start feeling better, but you do wonder what it's just going to take out of her generally for the next few days. Like, what sort of state is she going to be in when she next takes to the court? That feels like a real worry.
I'm already anxious about her next match. That's how I feel about Ons Jabeur right now. It's supposed to be uplifting watching Ons Jabeur, and I know she doesn't owe us that, but she wants it to be uplifting as well. That's the kind of tennis player that she wants to be, and she's not that at the moment. Maybe when the flu lifts she will be able to, but there's more going on than just flu here, and she's got Linda Noskova next.
Yeah, well, and she hits a heck of a ball, doesn't she? And she's upcoming, and we've seen...
And has beaten her this year.
Has she really? Oh, that's interesting.
I know that because the WTA sent me some quotes from Ons Jabeur, the last of which was, how do you feel about playing Linda Noskova next? You know, your standard look ahead to the next match question. And what did she say, David? She said, I'm out for revenge.
Wow.
So she continues to lean into the Ons Jabeur revenge tour narrative.
Good for her.
That's good. You know, I'm pleased to hear that.
It works. And listen, I think she is the sort of player that... I think what she's shown in the last year and a half is there's a grit to her that she can burrow her way through matches to get to that sweet spot where she does start enjoying it. And when she is the real... Well, I don't want to say the real player, because this is also the real player. This is another side to her. And every top player has moments where they don't feel that great and they just need to fight and get through. And that's what she's developed, which I have to say I didn't know that was going to be a feature of her game over the last few years. I mean, if it's flu, it's flu. If it's a cold, it's a cold, or whatever. I mean, COVID appears to be going around. John McEnroe's got COVID and has had to pull out of the tournament. Who knows whether other players are going to start getting afflicted by respiratory problems, particularly in these weather conditions, and it become a factor. I hope the best for her, because it'd be great if she could be a factor in this tournament.
Yeah, hear, hear. So Jabeur against Noskova in a couple of days' time. We've had a big on-paper upset over on court number 5 today. Caroline Garcia, last year's semi-finalist, going out to Wang Yifan in the upset that's not an upset. Before we come on to discuss that, I'm going to tell you about AO Travel.
Okay.
Can I have some more enthusiasm for that, please?
Excellent.
Great.
The Tennis Podcast is brought to you in association this US Open with AO Travel, who operate the travel program for the first Grand Slam of the calendar year and, of course, the next Grand Slam after this one, the Australian Open. Go to ozopentravel.com to check out the fantastic experiences they have to offer in Melbourne at the start of the year. And don't forget, we have a discount code of $500 Australian off any premium lounge package for friends of the Tennis Podcast subscribers. So one of many, 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 many reasons to become a friend of the Tennis Podcast. The biggest, of course, being the Bocco. The second biggest being supporting us in what we do year round and enabling us to be at these Grand Slam tournaments. And number three, access to $500 off an AO Travel package to the Australian Open 2024. So let's come on to talk about Caroline Garcia. 6-4, 6-1 for her against Wang Yifan, who has been in incredible form recently. And that is precisely why so many people were predicting this result today. I wondered if, because so many people were predicting that Caroline Garcia would lose today, there would be a bit of a defiance about her. You will think I'm going to lose this. I'm the seventh seed and you will think I'm going to lose today. Well, check this out. She was awful, David. She was absolutely awful, not just in terms of her game. I know she's reaching. She's searching for a game at the moment. Players go through that. I know you can be doing everything within your power. See Maria Sakkari yesterday and it just not coming. But there was no fight about her whatsoever. It was such a meek, limp performance. She double-faulted to end the match, and that just about summed it up. It was, look, I know Wang Yifan is in great form at the moment and I'm sure she has it in her to play great tennis. She didn't today. She didn't need to. Garcia handed her that match. It was horrible to watch.
Yeah. You know, when I was a kid, I used to have this car racing track called Scale Xtric. Have you ever seen that? And they'd go on a rail, and if you pressed it full on, it would fly off the rails without question. It would never not do that, right? And that's what it's like watching Caroline Garcia when she plays like that. She can't keep it on the track. And she's just smacking the ball left and right, not convincing, not able to keep it in the court, confines in an effective way. And I didn't watch much of the match. I saw the unforced errors happen. Were they drawn from her? Was she offering them up? I mean, did her opponent have to do much?
No, she was offering them up on a platter, mostly. Mostly.
Yeah. I was not surprised by the fact that Garcia wasn't playing well. As you said, we all know she hasn't been in good form. I was surprised by that point you make about how just sort of vacant Garcia seemed on the court. It was like she wasn't fully there. Mm. And I was surprised by that because I suddenly remembered a post that she put up on social media a couple of weeks ago after a loss to Marie Buzkova in Canada, where she said, "All my fears I had from January happened, and you know what? I'm still alive and still playing tennis. Our fears are always bigger and scarier in our head. It was nice to feel alive on court again last night." And I remember seeing that and actually double checking the score, because that post to me reads like you've won a match. You know, it's quite positive, feeling alive again on court. But she actually lost that match to Buzkova and then wrote that post. And I think really what that post was getting at was really speaking to the dark place she's been in all year, but it was suggesting that maybe a corner is being turned and she felt better on court again, even though she was losing. So coming in here, I wasn't expecting her to be playing good tennis, but I was expecting, based on that post, a little bit more energy, a little bit more fight. So maybe, you know, maybe that was premature to put that one post out. Maybe she hasn't overcome sort of the problems that she's been having. Or maybe, you know, this was a blip on the road to her feeling better again. But yeah, this performance didn't match up with someone who says that they're feeling better on court again. And I was quite hopeful after reading that post a couple of weeks ago. but this was a tough watch today.
Yeah, it was alarming for sure, and maybe another one that needs a break. I know she's got points to defend that she won't be able to defend, because of course she's not going to qualify for the WTA finals this year, so maybe that presents an opportunity to take some time off from the treadmill that is tennis. Like, I know I've been hard on her. It was so bad, it absolutely can't be the performance of somebody that was in an okay place, and I worry for her, and yeah, I really wish her well. Yeah. No other major upsets, I don't think, in the women's side of things so far today. Obviously, we still have the night session to come. Really comfortable wins for Jessica Pegula over Camilla Giorgi today on Ash, one of those that looks on paper like it could be tricky. I know the second set was more competitive than the scoreline 6-2 made it look, but just your classic Jessica Pegula performance there from her, I thought.
Yeah, she's got this incredible record against Giorgi. I think she's beaten Giorgi more than she's beaten any other player. They seem to always play each other. And watching it today, I realised how much more Pegula has in her game compared to Giorgi. Like, Georgie's an amazing ball striker. And I think if I just had to think of one thing about Jessica Pegula, because it would be, she's a great ball striker as well. But today, you just saw that she's got really nice touch, Pegula, and slice, and she can move better than Giorgi. And all of that just means that she's just a class apart from Camilla Giorgi. There was one really epic game, about 15 minutes, loads of break points. Pegula eventually won it, and once she did, she sort of had the match from that moment on. Yeah, just a nice start for Jessica Pegula on Ash, and it did mean that there was a whole 3.5 hours on Ash with no play this afternoon, because it went so quickly.
Yeah, the sets on Ash today were, well, in two matches, so five sets of tennis, how many games? Four in the Pegula match and two,
yeah,
in the Medvedev
one,
match.
1-1, love, 2-2.
Yeah, not a great day session ticket on Ash. Katerina Alexandrova beat finalists here 2 years ago, Leila Fernandez, 7-5, 5-7, 6-4, 3 hours, 4 minutes, grueling on the grandstand court, brutal for Fernandez. Look, this could have gone either way, but it's not happening for Fernandez, is it? And that's
pretty
a tough scene.
Typical of her career, really, since the Raducanu final. She's had some moments, but most of the time, she's ended up having fantastic, grueling matches and lost a lot of them. And yet, she hasn't been able to convert this transition from reaching a Grand Slam final into being a contender at the top on a regular basis. And it's a shame, because she is a great watch, she's a great experience to be in the stadium for, she's got a country that desperately wants her to be relevant all the time and to be up there, and I think most of us in the media do really too, and tennis fans around the world. She is really popular. And on the flip side, you've got Alexandrova, who never gets talked about, really, never gets much credit. I don't know what it is. Some players you just feel things about, and I don't feel a lot when I watch Alexandrova. Also, she hasn't reached a Grand Slam final, so she hasn't made herself relevant very often. But it's a good win.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Especially Fernandez kind of on a comeback role like that. Yeah, at her best, she's quite a force when she's in that kind of match. So I think for Alexandrova to overcome that, very impressive. Vondroušová, a very comfortable winner today. Madison Keys as well. Elina Svitolina, she won in straight sets today. She marches on to round number two. Daria Kazatkina needed three sets to come through. Didn't come to press after the match, wasn't requested. Obviously, there's no Russian journalists here, so I suppose that checks out. If she had come to press, I would have been interested to go to that to see if she had had anything to say about Saudi Arabia and the potential for the WTA finals to be going there. Hopefully she'll win again and we'll get a chance to speak to her again. She did, Matt, though, give a really interesting interview to the New York Times pre-tournament.
Yes, a big long read in the New York Times, sort of about the Ukraine-Russia issue in tennis generally, and lots of interesting quotes in there. Kasatkina said that she has suggested an alternative to being a being a sort of neutral athlete on the tour, playing with no flag next to her name. She said that she's asked the WTA if she can play with the rainbow flag next to her name. And another interesting line in that piece.
I'll do damn well in Saudi.
Another interesting line in that piece from Alina Svitolina, who is working with the agent John Morris, who's two of his clients are Daria Kasatkina and Andrei Rublev, and Alina Svitolina saying that those were the only Russian players that she sort of would have accepted her agent having as clients because of all that they've done to speak out against the war. So yeah, would highly recommend reading that piece. It's a long read. It's by Michael Steinberger in the New York Times, and yeah, lots of good quotes and just a sort of summary really of where we are with the Ukraine Russia issue in tennis right now.
And Andrei Rublev is right over your left shoulder, Matt. He's over there beaming. He won in straight sets today. He's doing some interviews. Don't distract him.
I thought he was right over my left shoulder for
a
moment.
No, he's not.
What are you saying about me?
He's over there. He's over there in the distance, looking very happy with life. Which brings us on to men's results that we've had so far today. We alluded to what happened in the first match of the day on Ash. Daniil Medvedev conceding just two games against 34-year-old unranked Attila Balázs, playing with a protected ranking. Not much to say. An absolute mismatch. And Medvedev has sensation Chris O'Connell next.
just on Balázs, he's been doing this all year, playing with his protected ranking and barely winning games in big matches. And actually, Ben Rothenberg made the point, I think it's a good one, that feels like one of the reasons, or one of the benefits, hopefully, of this ATP sort of baseline salary that they're bringing in, so the players don't feel compelled to just have to play. I think he won 80,000 or something today. Mm. Balázs, like, you can absolutely understand why he wants to play and wants to collect that money. But it's not a good spectacle for anyone. And you know, if money was his real motivation to play, which would be understandable, it's good, I think, that hopefully there's an alternative now to that.
Yeah, that's a very good point. It's like a universal basic income, isn't it? Mm. This thing that the ATP are introducing, and that seems like a fabulous idea, quite frankly. Andy Murray. Let's get into Andy Murray. It was entertaining and weird for three sets. I think we all, ahead of the match, thought it might be entertaining and weird for more than three sets. They were still three quite long set because it was Andy Murray, but he was asked after the match in his on-court interview, "Oh, Andy, a three-set match, how are you feeling?" And he was like, "This is nothing for me, mate." Yeah. I don't know if you've
are you
seen,
aware of my work?
I don't know if you've seen me play Grand Slams this year, but this is a quick day at the office, and it really was, but not an uneventful one. He was a breakdown in the second set. And yet it always felt like he was the better player, like he was on top of the match. He was having so many chances and just playing badly on break points, missing backhand returns on second serves, you know, and just, you can imagine how he was reacting when he was doing that and directing it towards his box. Interestingly, in his press conference, he was asked about, you know, how he remonstrates towards his box during matches, and he said, "Well, now that you're allowed to coach from the sidelines, at least they can talk back." He said, "Oh, it used to be awkward that I would shout at them, and they were, because they didn't want to risk being penalised for courtside coaching, they had to just sit there with weirdly neutral faces, where at least now they can say, 'Yep, good stuff, Andy, I agree with you, everything that you're shouting at me sounds great.'" Yeah, Corentin Moutet. What can you say about Corentin Moutet? Skilled is how Murray described him. He is fantastically skilled.
Yeah, I think Murray appreciates what the guy is able to do with a tennis racket as the sort of nerdy tennis player that he is. But I also probably think, and he wouldn't say this because he'd be too polite, he probably doesn't have too much respect for him as a competitor. Because, he's all over the place, isn't he? He does have moments of real fight when he's just totally dialed in, and then he has game upon game where he's spraying it all over the place and he's ranting. And I mean, look, he seems to have completely reinvented his backhand for some reason, and he's playing exclusively single-handers despite having had a double-hander earlier on in his career. And I don't know. I mean, I know he's had a bit of a bad time over the last year or two, but, you know, he doesn't feel like a real professional tennis player to me.
He had a surgery on his right wrist, I think, at the end of January this year, and now, as you said, plays with a single hander on the backhand. I mean, he had a lot of slice anyway, even when he had a two-hander. I suppose it's pretty impressive, like, talent level-wise, that he can make it work. Just, I don't know, I don't think many players ever have changed mid-career from a one-hander to a two-hander or the reverse. But it, like, if he hadn't had the surgery, you sort of think, like, it might be the sort of thing that he might just want to try anyway. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, I sort of feel like he's quite enjoying the fact that he can do it.
But yeah. you do see the difference between a shot that has been embedded in the DNA of a player from a very young age to one that they have just... Yes, he's got the shot, he can play it, but it doesn't look secure. It doesn't look effective. Not if it gets a proper workout from a player like Andy Murray.
It was such a strange match to watch in some ways for me. I watched most of it from courtside, from the press seats, which are in a really good position on grandstand. And the last Andy Murray match that I'd watched live was against Stefanos Tsitsipas on centre court at Wimbledon. And, okay, he lost that match and he won today, but my impressions after watching him against Tsitsipas were how clean and big he was hitting the ball in a way that he hasn't been for years, quite frankly. Whereas today, it just wasn't that kind of match. It was guile and courtcraft and, Corentin Moutet, you know, if Andy Murray did inject a little bit of pace, Corentin Moutet would instantly diffuse it. You know, so he was having to generate all the time, which Murray can do, but it's not really his vibe, is it? So it kind of feels like all the stuff that he's been working on and he's been pleased with himself for improving on, you know, after what was it, Washington, he talked about... No, it was his pre-tournament press conference, wasn't it, David, where he was saying the things he was particularly pleased with, and it sounded like, you know, belting that forehand confidently was one of the things he's pleased with himself about. But there wasn't really much opportunity to do that today. So, yeah, it was an interesting one. There was, towards the very dying stages of the match, the first recorded incident of VAR being put to use at the US Open.
That went
and, being put to precisely no use whatsoever.
It looked like they'd just not practiced it once as to how you do this, and I'm sure that's not correct. I'm sure they have tested it, but it just completely failed.
We're at a bit of a loss here as to whether what happened out there was what's supposed to happen and what's supposed to happen is just bad, or whether something went wrong.
Yeah, something went wrong because the umpire was pointing at the iPad and saying it's not coming up, and what you were seeing on the screen, you were seeing there was a double bounce called by the umpire. Moutet challenged it. I was in the press room at the time watching the match on the screen and instantly saw the replay about 15 times. They were just sort of moving it back and forth. And it was a very close replay as to whether it was a double bounce or not. It definitely was one. But the umpires there with the iPad...
You felt certain that it was a double bounce? Because 100%. I was on the court and they were showing it on the big screen and I didn't feel certain either way watching it on the big screen.
It can be a different pixelation almost with that type of screen, can't it? But up close, I felt very confident.
Yeah, it took me a few watches of the replay, but after, as you said, about 15, I was pretty confident that it was a double bounce. What I was confused about was whether that was what the umpire was expecting to see on her screen close up so she could take a look.
I thought she was expecting to see something far more forensic.
Or whether she was
that.
Expecting to see something different. I still don't know the answer to that question.
It was just a really slowed down version of a normal replay.
But she didn't have anything on her iPad.
She had
it appears nothing. To be that the process is she needs to have it on there in order, I guess, to look at it and maybe show the player. I don't know for sure.
Well, Corentin Moutet had his back to her.
Right.
But the wait went on so long. He was just stood there, hands on hips, actually gesturing, sort of making eye contact, seemingly, with Andy Murray's box, because that was the end that he was down. I mean, by that point, the air had rather been sucked out of the match. Corentin Moutet went down with a wrist injury. Well, he fell very awkwardly.
Yeah.
And for a few moments, it looked catastrophic. I mean, they instantly erected. He was down on the floor, writhing in pain. And they instantly, very efficiently, actually, erected umbrellas around him to shield him from the crowd like a fallen horse at the Grand National. And I thought, oh my goodness.
They were probably terrified he'd got one of those terrible breaks.
Yeah,
and then
he just got up and carried on.
Because he landed and he sort of tried to cushion his fall with his hand. And so effectively, I think it was his left hand, not his right. But
yeah,
he's basically, you know, whole of his weight down on his wrist. And I think that they were really concerned that he'd broken a bone in a horrible way or something like that. But classic Moutet, just gets up and carries on.
Yeah, I mean, he is an absolute pest. An absolute pest. Andy Murray he celebrated when Moutet smashed his racket. He took that was his sign of, I'm winning this. I'm getting somewhere here. I've got the bloke to smash his racket. So Murray moves on to round two, where he will face, it's party like it's 2014, David. He's going to face Grigor Dimitrov.
Who boldly went where he's never been before.
One from two sets to love down today for the first time in his career. And let's face it, it's not a short career anymore. Unbelievable on the negative side that it's taken him this long. But unbelievable that given it's been this long without him doing it, he's found a way to get over that hump, because knowing that record, I didn't give him much chance in the deciding set tiebreak today, and he proved me wrong.
I kept saying to you, I believe, but that was very much sort of hopeful.
You
belief.
Always believe.
Yes, I do, and most of the time it doesn't work out. I mean, I do think he showed great grit, and he was match point down three times, I think, and the third one of them, he came up with a do-or-die drop volley with the only shot available to him, with an absolutely rifled ball at his toes when he's at the net. And he had one little sliver of court that he could have put that ball into and it'd be a winner. And he somehow got it within an inch of the net to drop it just over for a winner. Saved it, took over. And, yeah, I mean, that's a huge win for him. I mean, I know it's on paper, you're thinking, first round, Alex Molchan, you should beat him if you want to have any sort of future going deep in Grand Slams. But he was in a hole, and he dug himself out. And fair enough, fair play.
And what's different about the meeting now, as opposed to back in their respective heydays, perhaps, is that Grigor Dimitrov is now coached by not one, but two of Murray's former coaches.
Yeah.
And Murray was asked about that in his press conference today, and he said, well, in theory, that should really help him.
Yeah, Jamie Delgado and Danny
He said
Danny
it with
Valverde.
A kind of subtext of, I'm not sure it actually will help him, because he's Grigor Dimitrov, and there was a slight sort of, I know how to beat him, about that answer. But it's really fascinating, that.
It is, and particularly because of the different stage of their lives that they're at. And obviously Murray now with the metal hip, I don't think they've played a big match at a Grand Slam since he had that operation done. I mean, I remember one match they played here that Murray won handily several years ago. There was the one that obviously Dimitrov beat Murray at Wimbledon. But, you know, this really is rolling back the years stuff, and it will be fascinating to see. I hope they both come into it fully fit. Murray certainly looked fit enough in his match, and Grigor's put himself through it, but he's a super fit lad, isn't he?
Yeah, he did take a while to leave the court, Dimitrov, didn't he?
Yeah.
He's probably on the pickle juice right now. Murray's win was part of an incredible day for the Brits that is still going. That was what your day, of course, centred around, David, working for BBC Radio. Wins for Katie Bolter, Cameron Norrie, Dan Evans has just won. and Jack Draper, along with Lily Miyazaki yesterday, all of the wins today in straight sets. Jodie Burridge has actually just walked past us. She's just starting her match.
She's three love up.
Ooh!
16 out of 16 sets for British players in the singles so far.
Yeah, and I mean, we were going through the matches earlier, and look, generally they were good draws. You know, they came out, given who they could have played, they were good draws. But I was really umming and ahhing over whether they would even win some of these matches, let alone win them in straight sets. It really has been, like a sort of snowball effect, it feels like.
Yeah, fantastic effort. We didn't even know if Jack Draper was fit to play. We were worried about him playing his match against Radu Albot today. Three straight sets for him. Delighted to see him back on a tennis court and looking like the force that we know he can be. It's very early days, but that was a sight for sore eyes. Bit of a dream day for you, David, because Artur Fils won as well. His first ever five-set win, his first ever Grand Slam win, beat Talon Griekspoor, the 24th seed, which takes some doing. You have to beat Talon Griekspoor, and he overcame cramp, I think, in the fourth set. He had some treatment for cramp. Matt, you said he forfeited a game in order to get treatment for cramp.
What an incredibly baller move to, in a set that you have to win, because he was two sets to one down, to forfeit a game. And it turned out to be absolutely the right decision, because he won that fourth set, then won the fifth. And I was speaking to Matt Futterman of the New York Times, who spoke to Artur Fils after the match, and Matt was like, the guy just radiates confidence, like, and belief in his own ability. And I think you need that in that moment to make that decision and trust that it's the right decision to sort of sacrifice a game for the greater good. You know, you've got to believe in yourself to be able to do that. And Matt was like, have you always been confident? And he was like, yep. any bumps along the way? No. I'm young. I'm Love confident. It. It's just like, imagine
young,
being
though,
like
and
that.
That would not have been my answer.
I was doing lots of fist pumping under the desk today for my face.
Yeah, you had a good time sitting at that desk today.
Yeah, and I just seemed to sort of, I don't know whether I had an effect, but I just seemed to tune in just when they needed it.
Anyway. Were you cheering on John Isner today, David? He extended his career by another match.
I can't say I was watching it, but I did see the scoreboard ticking over, and I saw him tearful at the end because they did a presentation, and his kids were there, and it was kind of nice.
Yeah, they did the presentation even though he won. How do we feel about that?
Yeah,
it was like, we've planned this presentation, John. We were expecting you to lose, but God damn it, we're going to do the presentation anyway.
I kind of like it, because now maybe he can just get on with the tournament, and they've got their presentation in. But I dare say if the moment he doesn't win, there's probably going to be a lot of schmaltz then as well.
Matteo Berrettini, a winner today over Ugo Humbert. Pleased for him, really pleased for him. Don't know what it means, don't worry, I won't ask you what it means, but well done, Matteo Berrettini. Rublev, as we say, was over there beaming. Alexander Zverev, all comfortable winners today. We have the night session still to come. It's just getting underway. Venus Williams in action against Grit Minnen. She is down in the score at the moment. If you haven't seen the pictures of her arriving at the Billie Jean King National Tennis Centre tonight, do yourself a favour and check them out, because, well, I mean, queen status confirmed, if it needed confirming. She just looked incredible and so ready to go. And I hope she can make a match of that. She has got break point on the Minnen serve in soon-to-be-out-of-date tennis news. Following her onto Ash, it is Carlos Alcaraz against Dominic Kupfer. Jannik Sinner is currently in action on Armstrong. Stan Wawrinka is still going on Grandstand. There's lots still happening on the outside courts, actually. Donna Vekic is a settle against Sasha Vickery. Pam, we're thinking of you. And we'll be back to wrap up all of those remaining matches in part two.
Yeah, the big one being what will happen to Hubert Hurkacz. He's two sets to love down.
Is he? I did not know that. Goodness.
Dun, dun, dun. See you in part two.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or your smart TV, both in HD. Matt, this sounds like your kind of thing.
Yeah, there's nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere, dipping in to where there's the latest final set tiebreak or even the latest bit of aggro.
And David, don't worry, you can just watch your favourite court, Suzanne Longlen, all day if you want. But whatever you choose, the French Open promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history.
Do you know, I think in a lot of ways, the French Open is now my favourite slam. It's the strategy of the clay court tennis, the way it challenges players, and particularly now with legends of the game up against a new generation of young players. I cannot wait.
Be there when it happens, with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Subscribe to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TENNISPOD20 for 20% off your annual subscription. We are back, folks. We are back at Tennis Podcast Towers. The night session at the US Open Day 2 has just concluded. And before we get to the action on the show courts, Matt Roberts, you left the people with quite the cliffhanger.
Mm.
Please put them out of their miseries.
Well, Hubert Hurkacz was 2 sets to love down last time we spoke. He then fell 5-4 down in that third set, and Marc-Andrea Huser served for the match. But Hubert Hurkacz broke back, won the third set in a tiebreak, and then rolled through sets 4 and 5 to survive. Which is probably quite significant. Like, I don't have Hubert Hurkacz winning this title by any means, but I do see him as a threat, potentially, to Medvedev, I guess, in particular, in that quarter.
David's got stats on Hubert Hurkacz.
Well, I decided to go and look into how many 3-set and 5-set matches he's had this year, and it's a lot. I mean, I think we've touched on it at various points throughout the year, but I mean, he's played 7 5-set matches out of 12 Grand Slam matches in total this year. He's also played in 23 final set matches over 3 sets, and only played 15 that were in straight sets. So he's played way more that have gone the distance than haven't.
He's going for Kei Nishikori's record.
I mean, it really is astonishing what he's done this year. And I still don't entirely know where the unnecessary sort of scenic route starts and the incredible finding his way out of the hole and getting through these matches begins. Because, I mean, I suppose it's both, really, isn't it? But
yeah, just to see discussions of Kei Nishikori past.
Right, exactly.
Very well done for winning 5-set matches that you shouldn't have been in the first place.
And it makes it tough to gauge, generally, sort of how he does in big moments, because he wins so many tight matches, as David has just described. You think, oh, well, he's good under pressure, he's good in big moments, but then he doesn't win that many tight moments and big moments against fellow top players, and that probably is where he needs to be judged now, because he's been around a while now.
I don't think a bloke like him with his game should be having all this trouble. He's not Kei Nishikori. He's got a massive serve. He's
You'd have said the same about Marin Cilic. Is it about the game? It's about the mind.
Well, I think it is. I think you're right. But that's not good enough, is it? I mean, I don't think he's got the excuses that Kei Nishikori's got, is what I'm getting at.
What, body falling apart?
Well, just, you know.
Well, I feel like everything's a bit of a grind for Nishikori because he struggles to hold serve, you know, whereas Hurkacz is just rolling
through. It's the mind.
Yes,
it's all in the mind.
I agree with you. It must be.
Well, anyway, Hubert Hurkacz lives to fight another day, and that fight will be against Jack Draper.
I mean, that's interesting. If Draper is fit, and honestly, the idea that he would be fit even to have won his first round match, I mean, I think in the live show we did the other day, I said I didn't think Draper would play this tournament. I thought he would pull out before the first round, and he won it in straight sets today. And when you look at him, you think, how can a man with a physique like that ever get injured? I mean, he looks like the Hulk. He's so well put together. But, you know, the body has been a liability for him this year. But I tell you what, I wouldn't mind watching that if he's playing well.
I suspect BBC Radio might make your dreams come true, David.
I might have to describe every single shot.
Pay you for it, yeah. Yeah, literally living the dream. It's a good job that Hubert Hurkacz brought the drama because the night session matches on the show courts categorically did not tonight, did they? Should we get Venus Williams out of the way? It was a tough scene for her against Grit Minnan, who had qualified and played a great match and did so fantastically not to let the occasion and the stage bother her one bit. But yeah, 1-1 for a great champion like Venus Williams. It's tough. It's tough to see. I suspect even Grit Minnan fans found that a little bit uncomfortable, and just a real balloon pop of a moment for Arthur Ashe Stadium, followed by, who'd have thought it, an even bigger balloon pop when Dominic Kupfer rolled his ankle really badly. And we can say this with utter conviction because we have seen that ankle roll in slow motion so many times, courtesy of ESPN. I could describe it for you in great detail, but I won't inflict that horror on you. A really bad ankle roll right at the start of the match. And he struggled on for a set and a bit, but throughout that set and a bit, he was talking, or his coach was, he was in dialogue with his coach about at what stage he should retire. So it wasn't a tennis match, really, and there's very little to say. So should we cut straight to talking about Alcaraz's singing?
And his vest. He was wearing some pretty out there colours tonight.
It was Tiafoe's kit, but in a different colourway.
Like a sort of cream or gold with lots of pattern on it.
A lot of red as well.
Yes. Mm. And then he played a few points and showed us why he won the title last year, and then it was over. And then he did some singing. So what was that all about?
He did so well.
Oh.
Being put on the spot to sing in front of however many people were in Arthur Ashe Stadium.
I was about to claw my ears and eyes out so that I didn't have to witness what Brad Gilbert was requesting that Carlos Alcaraz do in that post-match interview. But, he made the weirdest thing ever not weird. Yeah. And that's Carlos Alcaraz all over, didn't he? He watched.
He threw in
his
little dance as well.
He threw in. I mean, what a guy! We watched his pre-match interview, didn't we, with Mary Jo Fernandez? I think it was. You know the interviews they
did. No, that was with Brad as well.
Was it?
Brad's been on everything.
If in doubt,
it was Brad.
He's coaching one of them as well.
He was on air at midday today, bragging about how he'd only had 3 hours sleep. Unreal. Anyway, pre-match interview in the tunnel. You know the ones we're talking about.
They're usually terrible.
The ones that are always, at best, completely unenlightening and pointless, and at worst, hugely uncomfortable. Carlos Alcaraz strolls up to Brad Gilbert beaming, absolutely beaming, and answers his questions about what he's expecting from the match and what tactics he's going to deploy and how he's feeling. He answers them earnestly and genuinely with this huge beaming smile on his face. Honestly, you've never seen anyone do one of those interviews like that.
No, I haven't. And I've been coming here for 20 years and they've never been anything other than, oh God, is it over yet?
Yeah, so that's how it started, and it ended with him doing a dance on the court. So that was Carlos Alcaraz's evening. Over on Armstrong, we've just watched Aryna Sabalenka wrap up victory against Marina Zanevska, the Belgian player of Ukrainian heritage, always wears the Ukrainian flag pin on her hat, and there was no handshake after this match, but not in an awkward, uncomfortable way, in a way that I think Sabalenka was expecting, perhaps. But we did unearth over the course of this match that it was to be Marina Zanevska's last on tour. She's 30 years of age. She's been suffering with chronic back pain for 4 years, and much like Annette Contaveit, it prevents her from putting in the training required to be a top-level professional, and she's having to step away from the sport, and I find that really heartbreaking. So I wish her very well indeed. Sabalenka, a few wobbles on serve at the start. She's credited the New York crowd with the win, trying to win them over.
Not a bad idea. You don't have to say much, do you, to these crowds to make them leave thinking, oh, I like her, she's all right.
Everyone loves a compliment, David.
They do, don't they?
Yeah.
Except British people.
Yeah, we get...
We just start looking at
each other. We get awkward and weird. Whatever you do, don't ask one of us to sing on a tennis court in an interview situation. That would not go as well as it did with Carlos Alcaraz. Before Sabalenka was Jannik Sinner. 6-3, 6-1, 6-1 for him against Yannick Hanfmann. We didn't see much of this, so my question for you is, has a Yannick ever played another Yannick before? Hashtag analysis.
Come on, Matt Stat.
Don't know the answer.
That'd be a good stat, actually,
that would be
it?
A good stat. I mean, I did notice there were a few players of the same name playing each other. We had Alexander Vukic, Alexander Zverev today.
Yeah. Any others?
There was another one I noticed, but I now can't remember what it was. It's not great.
That's
content,
quite a good
is
stat,
it?
Isn't it?
Well, is it? I don't know.
If it wasn't apparent from the start of part two of this podcast...
We haven't got a lot to talk about.
It is becoming apparent now that it was an absolute dud of a night session,
yeah.
Folks. It really... Yeah, it was a dud. It was a dud.
It was so bad.
The show courts, the two main courts were they were duds today, both in particularly Ash.
Is that the worst centre court Grand Slam day of all time?
In terms of match quality, yes.
And in terms of drama?
I can't imagine, yeah. I mean, sure, some people, if you just wanted to see Carlos Alcaraz for the first time and say you've seen Carlos Alcaraz, you've laid eyes on him, and I respect that. That is some people have bucket list things, don't they? And you're not bothered about the quality of the match at all, then maybe you might say differently. But basically... Yes.
Do you remember that Wimbledon day where there were back-to-back retirements?
Yeah.
That'd be up there. But, I mean, this is two sessions, and they've all been rubbish.
Yeah. Is it, look...
It needed the singing
I know this will be cold comfort for anybody that had a ticket for today. Although, as Matt is always pointing out, an Arthur Ashe Stadium ticket in week one of the US Open... is in many ways the best ticket in tennis because you can get access to any court. There is no court you can't go on with an Arthur Ashe Stadium ticket.
Even Louis Armstrong?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because there is some assigned seating, but there is also
free
public seating on there, which is fantastic.
I've been coming here 20 years, didn't know that.
But tomorrow's schedule, I'm loath to jinx it, but I would be surprised if it disappointed in the same way.
Big it up, Catherine.
It kicks off with Mira Andreeva against Coco Gauff.
Okay.
Yes, please.
I'm with you. Yes, please. And while I would like that to be in the slot of the day because I think it's the match of the day. I rather suspect that Coco Gauff is having to play early matches because she is in both the women's doubles with Jessica Pegula and the mixed doubles with John Isner.
Crikey.
So that's for your most, and this is for the tournament, I'm not saying for everybody, but for the tournament, Coco Gauff is the number one player in terms of scheduling. She's the number one player for ESPN. She's the number one player for the US Open. When your number one player is in mixed, is in both forms of doubles, that is a scheduling nightmare. Mm. So wishing them luck, in the words of Venus Williams. Zapata Mirayas against Novak Djokovic, second on Arthur Ashe. I suspect that might have a bit of a Tuesday Arthur Ashe feel about it, that match. But we'll see, we'll see. The night session, Sebastian Offner against Francis Tiafoe. The second night session match is good in a very throwback way. Petra Kvitova against Caroline Wozniacki. But you said something earlier, David, when we were going through the schedule just after it had dropped. You said Tiafoe can carry a session on his own now.
Yeah,
it's not about the match. It's not against who he's playing. All due respect to Sebastian Offner, he could have been anyone. Tiafoe was there in that prime time slot purely because he's Tiafoe.
Yeah, he's a name. He is recognisable now after last year. He can carry a show. He is the show. And he rises to it. It's one of those players now that you can hang your hat on. And I just love that about him, really. And the only thing is he's going to have to keep delivering. I think it's really important for him that if he's given slots like that, he needs to play well. Because in the past, and it's less so recently, but in the past he has let himself down. He was occasionally just thrown in a real dud of a performance, and there have been a few of those lately, actually. So I think it'll be different here at the US Open because of the surroundings and how much he loves it, but I think that's important that it is that way.
Mertens against Collins on Armstrong, then Świątek Saville, and third on there is Dominic Thiem against Ben Shelton.
Oh,
yes, please.
Yeah, the night session there tomorrow. Rybakina against Tom Ljanovic and Juan Pablo Varillas against Taylor Fritz.
That was a big moment for Tom Ljanovic the other day, actually. She played her first match of the year because she's been so injured. And, you know, you think of her this time last year, you know, having the sort of tournament of her life and then being really one of the stars of the first series of Breakpoint and then not being able to back any of that up because she was injured, but she won the other night, and that was really good to see.
Yeah, she still had one of the moments of the year without playing, which is doing that Tennis Channel interview in a bush because Matteo Berrettini was still in the Australian Open, lest we forget.
Was that this year?
It dropped this year.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Our discovery that was a thing.
We watched it happen this year.
Right, yes. I'm with you. Sorry, I was getting the timeline of their relationship very muddled in my mind.
Tsitsipas against Stricker is on Grandstand. I'm going to try and watch a bit of that because people whose opinions I respect really rate Dominic Stricker, and he...
Whereas my opinion was that I didn't even know who he was.
He closely resembles, facially, the Scottish comedian Kevin Bridges, which is quite a sight to behold. Victoria Azarenka against Zhu Lin. They played at the Australian Open, didn't they? Coco Gauff, Jessica Pegula in doubles action on Grandstand tomorrow. And then Casper Ruud against Zhong Zhizhen, which could be quite a match. Taylor Townsend, Beatrice Haddad-Meyer first on 17. Like that matchup. Bonzi Eubanks, Tommy Pauls over there, Jennifer Brady. Lily Miyazaki, British interest. She won her first round match a couple of days ago. She takes on Belinda Bencic. Lots of doubles tomorrow. How is doubles starting already? It's too soon. Karolina Mukova is on court 11 tomorrow. I imagine she'll sort of tweet a map to help people find it.
Ostapenko might.
Yeah, she's on court 11 as well, isn't she? Mm. Yeah, it's a... Holger, that's a Grand Slam champion on court 11. stick that in your pipe and smoke
Ostapenko
it.
Ostapenko would take a picture of a globe.
I went to Medvedev's press conference today, and it had been such an uneventful match. It was a bit of a free-for-all. It was a real kind of an audience with Daniil where people just asked him what he thought about stuff because there was nothing to say in relation to the match. And I thought, I can't let go of the gift that Holger Rune has given us with the whole court five thing. So I asked Medvedev what he thought about it. And I think he had some sympathy, but he basically said, if you're going to do a tweet like that or say something, it's probably better to do it after the match, and ideally if you've won the match. Which is a great take. Right, that's your lot for today, folks. Wishing for better from tomorrow, certainly the evening session tomorrow. It wasn't a dud all round today, but just a bit of a bummer what we've seen in the last couple of hours. But tomorrow's going to be better. We are pumped.
Oh, yeah.
As always, we have Willow, our lovely US Open mascot. Hello, Willow. We have our mascots. I've got Xenia. Hey, Xenia. David's got Maisie.
Right, Maisie.
I talked David into a prediction that got you points today, Maisie.
Mm.
You are welcome.
I mean, I was leaning that way anyway, Maisie. You know, we've had a good run recently. And
Matt's got Darwin.
Darwin and no points. You need a Whitmire one. How did she do that in 2023?
Yeah, but if you'd got points, it would have been Vera Zvonareva one. How did she do that in 2023? Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Hannah and Drew. Hello to you all. And David's here. Therefore, shout-outs are here.
Yes. This will make up for the night session. We have Coda Farha in Sydney.
Right, Coda.
Hello, Coda. Coda, I'm not sure in what language, but I know it means a friend to everyone.
Like Woolly's dog.
That's how I know that, because Woolly's, our friend and colleague, Sarah Wooland, Woolly, of excellent handwriting whilst logging live shows fame, her dearly departed lovely dog Coda, who I had a very special bond with, was called Coda, and that's why she was called Coda, because she was a friend to everyone. So hello, Coda, literally our friend.
Yeah,
lovely.
A friend to everyone in this room.
We've also got Anna, who is in California now, but formerly of Sydenham.
Oh, hello, Anna.
Right, Anna.
That's my brother's neck of the woods. He's a member of Sydenham Tennis Club. I believe he's... In fact, I need to check in with him. He was playing the semi-finals of the men's singles at Sydenham.
Takes it all quite seriously, doesn't he?
he's reading Winnie Ugly at the moment.
Yeah, he's reading Brad Gilbert's book that is inspiring. Coco Gauff to great things.
It's a serious scene at Sydenham Tennis Club. The standard's quite high.
It's not like Solihull Simon.
Get in touch, Anna, and let us know if you were once a member of Sydenham Tennis Club. It's a lovely club.
Is it?
Yeah, it's a really nice club.
He's good as well, isn't he, your brother?
I was going to play with him there once, but we cancelled because of wind.
Whose decision was that?
Mutual.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
See, I'd have taken him out if it was windy, because I don't cancel for anything.
Thank you, Anna.
And finally, we have Bethan, who is in Balham.
Oh, well, that's near me.
Mm.
Well, it's actually sort of equidistant between me and my brother. I drive through Balham to go to my brother's. Mm. What a magical mystery tour of South London.
Bethan says, I got a shout out in your first episode of 2022, which resulted in me discovering a number of other tennis podcast listeners amongst my friends, as I received a number of messages asking if I was the Bethan who just got a shout out on the pod.
Oh. There's only one Bethan.
I've recommended the pod to pretty much everyone I've spoken to who has any interest in tennis, so I'm interested to see how many of them listen to my advice and get in touch after my shout out this year.
Love that, Bethan.
Bethan is doing it right, folks, all right? This is what I want all of you to do. Tell all of your friends and all of your family and everybody at the tennis club, and then they'll all listen.
Love that. Balham is a lovely place as well. Yeah. Thank you, Bethan.
Good work, Bethan.
For being a friend, for being a shout-out friend, and for creating other friends. Love that for you, love that for us. There's Josh Allen on the telly. Are you impressed that I can identify him now, being the NFL fan that I am?
This is a triggering game to be on. This does not end well for the Bills.
Okay. Oh, look, Catherine, they're all bending over.
Yeah, they are moving at the moment, so that's something. Right, that officially is your lot, folks, but not for long. We will be back tomorrow with our day 3 tennis podcast. Hey, if you would like to become a friend of the tennis podcast, support us, fund us to come to these Grand Slams and do these podcasts and cover the sport in the way that we do, then the link to do that is in our show notes. If you would like to get access to the newsletter for free, the link to do that is our show notes. The newsletters are daily during the Slams and they are excellent. So, without further ado, let's call time on this dud of an evening and tell you that we'll be back and we'll be better tomorrow.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.